Most of what you've been told about posture is incorrect. We're going to be talking about some of the truths and the fallacies of posture on this week's episode of...
Welcome to Reconsider. I'm Bill Hartman. This is the podcast to challenge you to ask better questions, to look beyond traditional models of thinking, and arrive at better health and fitness solutions.
So, Bill wrote an article on the UHP Network for the UHP Plus folks. If you don't know what the UHP Network is, it's a social network that Bill and I created to help create the best practitioners possible using the Unified Health and Performance Continuum model. That's a UHP.network, and that's been around for more than a year now. There's tons of articles and videos. There's an entire free area with free courses, and then there's the deep dive section of the UHP Network, which is called Plus, which is where we have a lot of clinicians and coaches and enthusiasts who are all in there having discussions with live calls with Bill, forum posts of case studies, lots of articles. One of these articles, which we're going to be talking about today, is about posture. And the article title is Posture Doesn't Exist. And that might be what this podcast episode title is as well. It's click-worthy, but it's also true, and we're going to get into why that is. A lot of people grow up hearing from their mother or someone, you know, in authority, a figure of authority, tell them to not slouch, to stand up straight, to sit up straight, to stop, you know, bending over, you know, that type of stuff. One of those things that, like, charm school and...
Leave it to Beaver.
Leave it to Beaver. That's kind of where it comes from. I believe their military posture is also very much an influence.
Sure.
People's belief that this is important to stand up straight.
If it worked, we would solve the back pain problem like right off the bat, wouldn't we?
Sure. And, you know, 85% of people wouldn't have back pain. The thought is not, okay, well, all 85% of people with back pain or whatever number, crazy number it is these days.
It's 100%.
Yeah. Are all of those people just showing bad posture? Is this just something that, like, y'all fall into? Some sort of trap? I don't know. But anyways, I think the biggest fallacy there is probably that this is some sort of static representation.
Well, I would lean in the direction that the biggest fault here is the assumption that there's an ideal.
Yeah.
Right. And that is then the comparison. And then it's like anything that's a deviation from that is represented as, oh, it's dysfunction and you need to fix it. And it's like, no, it's actually just representation of strategy, right?
Right.
Versus, and again, there has been legacy systems that have tried to create some, you know, magical alignment. Like you get the plumb line thing where it's like, oh, this should be aligned with this, should be aligned with this, should be aligned with this. When the reality is, it's like, we're not static ever. We're not, I mean, if you're a living, breathing human, we're not static, right?
Right.
Anything, any alternative probably are.
Well, yeah, but if your digestive system works, if your blood is flowing and if you're breathing in and out air,
yeah.
You can't be static.
You can't be. So what we're actually looking at is we're actually looking at a dynamic strategy, right, with a constraint, right? So the constraint is what we would refer to as position. So standing, sitting, lying, whatever it might be, right? So we can categorize that as positional, but the reality is like you're using an active dynamic strategy in all of those situations. You're just constraining it, right? And then that is what it's revealing. It's like saying, this is how you are solving a problem. That's it. Like, it's not good, it's not bad. It's just what is. And all we have to be able to do then is to understand the strategy that's being presented based on what our intent may be. It's like, what do we have to do to favorably influence behavior, not posture, behavior to produce the desired outcome?
Right. So I guess we can talk about movement from a behavioral perspective. And also I want to talk about that word strategy, because we're talking about a human system
right.
that is designed to move within our gravity field, or it's evolved to move as efficiently as possible within our gravity field. But there are certain things about being on two legs and having yes. the organs that we have and the skeletal yes. structure that we have that sort of predicates yes. us and pushes us in one direction, literally.
Correct.
So absolutely. I guess let's talk about that. Let's talk about what it means to be human. I know someone asked you that once. It's for you to define yeah. what it means yes. to be human. But yes. when in terms of posture, in terms uh-huh. of what strategy is and what movement is this emergent behavioral yes. Yes. representation?
Yes.
Let's kind of talk about that.
Well, it's every aspect of the system working together to produce an outcome based on whatever is needed or desired, or again, so that's why we refer to it as a behavior and a strategy, is because all of the different elements. So if you break up your body into however many subsystems that you want to break it up into, all of them are contributing at some point in time, right? Without priority until context defines the priority, right? So everybody wants to default to like the top down. Well, the brain is the great organizer and then the decision maker. And it's not really, it's a monitor. It's involved, but you have so many elements of your movement capabilities that don't require the brain, because the brain's too slow in many circumstances to even participate. And all you got to do is watch the NFL and watch a running back run straight into the back of an offensive lineman during a play. It's like, why did he do that? Because he didn't have time to make any other changes. Because if he was thinking, he would have been holding still, right? And there was a feed forward, if you will, in that circumstance. Like, he had made a prediction. The prediction did not come true, and therefore it looks like an error, when the reality is he was just doing whatever the best that he could. And so all of our behaviors are like that, where we have all systems contributing to whatever degree that they do. And then the context says, well, this one might be a little bit more important this time. This one might be a little more important next time. And then, so that's all of our behaviors as far as movement is concerned. And even though we appear to be static, and we would, many would refer to it as some element of posture, it's literally a coordinative strategy within the system itself to produce whatever the outcome is. It's trying to solve a problem. And then that's what we see. And then if we can understand that, we can better identify what that strategy is trying to tell us, as far as like, well, what needs to happen in that circumstance. So if somebody presents with, you know, some measurable complaint or symptom or whatever, it's going to, the strategy that we can identify is going to help us resolve. It's like, okay, so here's what they're trying to do. Here's what might be happening. Here's why we're not seeing the efficient transfer of energy through the system. We have a stagnation. So for instance, somebody walks in with knee pain, it's like, oh, so that's a situation where we have that, like, literally energy that moves through your body. So this is mechanical energy. And if the shape doesn't allow it to propagate through the system, it can actually stagnate, and it can actually hit the same spot over and over and over again. It's like a little brother that's poking you in the shoulder 1,000 times. One poke doesn't do anything, but 1,000 times gets annoying. Right. And so that's essentially what we're looking at. So it's no different than if we were looking at any other dynamic movement, as far as how the behavior is constructed. We just have to understand what it is that we're looking
at. Yeah. And I think that's something we're sort of glossing over. We're talking as if people understand the fundamental things that are happening to the human system. So I think it'd be good for us to discuss, just go all the way back to the constraints and the internal and external forces that we're trying to manage that are actually making people revert or move towards these bad postural, making air quotes, positions. So your typical slouching, the side bends, the hip hikes, the upslips and downslips, and all these things that you might see, how that might affect someone's gait, or why someone might think about it. So I think we need to talk about the structural constraints, the organs, what happens in gravity, and then maybe even get into a little bit of the physics of torque and angular momentum and precession.
Okay. Well, we started with you with your innards, right?
Yeah.
So internal organs, viscera.
Well, it moves,
and it has mass, right? So every time you take a breath, it moves. Every time you move, it moves, right? And we have to, and it's contained within us, so we have to be able to manage that. And so there are forces involved, right? That influence how we can move and how we need to respond to a movement. So all you got to do is like, and we've used water bags as examples in the past, sort of as a representation of how some of this stuff moves. So if you've ever swung a water bag around, or even just a plain old medicine ball, you know, throwing a medicine ball, it's like that ball has mass, and you create momentum, and you can feel the movement as you load it and throw it and release it. Like, you can feel that behavior, and that stuff's going on inside of you all the time. And because of the organization of your internal organs, as far as their distribution of mass, then we have uneven forces that are being produced inside of you. And we always have to manage those. They're actually advantageous, because it helps us actually walk on two legs, which is kind of nice, but it could also knock you off your feet if you don't manage it well. So, and I've said this before, that we spend the entire first year of our life trying to learn how to manage those internal dynamics so we can actually stand up and walk. And so that's what, you know, the little kids do. And it doesn't stop. As long as you're alive and breathing and moving, it doesn't stop. We still have to manage those. And those are biased, very, very specifically, because of the distribution of mass. Like, your organs don't change position. They're always relatively in the same position. They do move, but they don't change their ultimate position. And because of that, we always have the same internal dynamics to manage. And therefore, we always have to maintain some external strategy to manage those. Because even when we're apparently holding still, we're moving, and those are moving. And so we have to have a dynamic strategy. And again, that's what we're looking at when we start to see what people would perceive as these static behaviors. And they're not static. It's always a dynamic strategy.
Right. But over time, given the inherent organ structure, skeletal structure, how we are designed as human beings to move forward through space. Feet are facing forward. Eyes and nose and ears are all facing to in front of us to be able to hear and take in everything in front of us.
Yes.
Over time, with exposure to gravity, trying to solve for this problem that we're dropped into, we see these common sort of occurrences from movement that someone might consider a pattern of movement or slouching or some type of thing that needs to be corrected.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And yeah, the attempt to correct that, the main thing I think we're trying to speak out against or get people to reconsider is some of the solutions that people have come up with to correct bad posture. Mm-hmm. So meaning something that is caused by internal organ dynamics and gravity and propulsion of a human system forward through space is going to create a lot of compressions throughout the body. Yeah. In order to try to compensate for all of these movements within the center of gravity towards, yeah, this area that they're being pushed by all these forces.
Yeah.
So if I try to combat this compression and all of these compressions with more compression, so for instance, trying to strengthen my glutes by doing a band walk or squeeze my shoulder blades together and stay as tall as I can and pack my neck into place, all I'm doing is I'm taking a twisted and compressed system and trying to twist and compress it in an opposite way. But just by doing,
but you're
so,
not. But right, you're not. It's not in opposition. That's the problem.
The thought is that it's in opposition.
It
but
is
let's
not.
Talk about what's actually happening when I just add more and more compression on top of twists and compression, and what you might call a containment strategy.
And there you go. That keyword, containment. So we have to control the internal dynamics, and so we are the container. Physically, we are the container. We have two strategies. We can create space, okay? We can turn to create space, or we can press down. And everything that we see, as far as what people would perceive as the static behaviors, they're not static, but what they would perceive is, it's like you're seeing a combination of those two strategies. So we're either moving into a position to make more space to turn, okay, to help us turn against what are these internal dynamics, or we're trying to push down and creating a gradient into the ground, which again does slow us down. It is effective, right? Doesn't necessarily give the visual appearance that people would perceive as something that is good. And it may or may not be good depending on when it's used, how it's used. Are we altering a constraint? Is there an adaptation that's taking place that creates interference for other activities and so on and so forth?
Right. So, yeah, so we're dealing with someone still coming into this episode thinking that there is such a thing as good or bad posture. They're curious, right? Because we're telling them that posture doesn't exist. I want to try to offer an alternative perspective so that someone can walk away from this with something other than the knowledge that Bill and Chris are saying posture doesn't exist. Like what is the most compelling way that we can try to explain to someone, let's like in an elevator pitch scenario, mm-hmm. How do I tell someone, or how can I explain that the whole posture thing is not a proper or truthful representation of what's going on?
All it is a shape as a result of a strategy to solve a problem. The problem right. is to control your position in space. And that is the best representation, because it's not reliant on a comparison to an imagined ideal and an attempt to bend and twist a structure into that shape, because it doesn't yeah. work that way. Because you have to understand like how these behaviors occur. So this is, and so then we fall back on the structural constraints. So we've already talked about the internal dynamics, but then we have other structural elements that are associated with our skeletal structure and behavioral strategies associated with, okay, well, what does that structure lend itself to? And then that creates movement biases that we have to account for. It's like certain structures are better at the turning part. Certain structures are better at the pushing down part. And so that's why you'll see variations of these strategies across a population. It's like they're not the same. They might be categorized the same because of the way that they're being identified. So again, if I put somebody against a plumb line and their head falls in front of that imaginary plumb line, that's branded as a forward head, when the reality is it's like had nothing to do with the head. The head was just following what the rest of the strategy was. If I shove your sternum down into the ground, guess what? Your head goes relative forward to some imaginary plumb line. And you just blame the forward head. So now here's the thing. We called it a forward head. So what's the correction for that? Right. If it's broken, and that's what's the correction? Well, pull the head back. Guess what? You just superimposed another compressive strategy on top of the compressive strategy that was already existing. You didn't make it better.
Yeah. So the question, so you've offered this information, but someone listening to this is just going to say, okay, well, what do I do with any of that? And that's, mm-hmm. I want to try to give something to someone to be able to take away from all this. So if we're going to go into this believing that, so we've changed this person's perspective, they're open mm-hmm. to the idea that this posture fallacy is not the right way to mm-hmm. look at things. Mm-hmm. Now they have some type of tightness, or they've been led to believe that their neck pain, their lower cervical pain, is going to go away if they pinch their shoulder blades together and pack their mm-hmm. neck in place.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be working for them, or they've managed those symptoms, but other symptoms have come up. Yeah. Because that's what we find a lot with someone that's just adding a strategy on top of another strategy. It's yeah. just going to, you just run out of, right. you're running out of space.
I can create a compensation that alleviates a symptom,
sure.
but that doesn't really solve the problem unless the, if all you're concerned about is a symptom and you resolve the symptom, then more power right. to you.
Bingo.
But I would hesitate to say that you did something in an ideal manner in that circumstance.
Right. So circling back a little bit, we're talking about how the strategies that people have against gravity with their inherent structure is pushing them forwards through space. It's turning them in a way over to their right side. And there might be many models that talk about this in a certain way. There's osteopaths from 100 years ago or more that are talking about this. And the people have been seeing this sort of these common patterns and compensations for years. Sure. But what you need to do with any person that's dealing with some type of injury or movement problem, you have to identify where they're at in that progress towards that end of the base of support, which is what we're talking about. Or further than that, if they've gone beyond it, they've created some type of strategy in order to contain themselves from falling over. So that could mean that the spine is twisting in different ways above and below the rib cage. What really it boils down to is being able to identify where you are at in space, which may require you to tag out to some professional that can help identify this, which is oftentimes what we have to do when people come and ask us or you questions about this or that issue, or they're having this thing is happening when they do this and they think that there's going to be some definitive solution. It's like, no.
Well, because they give things a name. They say it's a shoulder impingement. Well, a shoulder impingement implies that whatever I have classified as a shoulder impingement has the same solution every time you call it something.
Sure.
Right. So that creates a problem.
And it would also imply that there is always one solution to it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's like the forward head thing. It's like, oh, your head falls in front of the plumb line. Well, shove it back. Yeah.
Well, that doesn't seem like a solution. So, you know, like a tall, skinny grandma whose bones are not going to change much anymore. She's going to pack her neck. And then the 20-year-old power lifter who is completely different structure, completely different adaptability is going to do the same thing. It's like it's kind of nonsense. Yeah.
It's actually two different scenarios, and they will have two different outcomes. Absolutely. And one may appear to be successful, and the other one appears to actually aggravate. It's like you don't know. You don't know.
Right. So you have to gather information first. So if we're trying to help somebody understand this for themselves or for their clients or whoever they work with, identify where you are or where this person is in space. So we're talking about how far forward they are and how far to the right or where they have moved within their base of support. So the place where normal exists, where the people that never are going to go see Bill or never going to seek out help, those people all have enough range of motion and relative motion throughout their body so that they can live their life without any sort of real issue or hindrance in their movement.
It does happen.
Those really aren't the people we're talking about. We're talking about someone that has gotten away from this area of maximal adaptability. They need to figure out a way to reverse engineer and walk back these compensations that they've created for themselves or that have been created given the system and the environment that they live in. And only once they're able to do that and manage what sort of strategy has become part of their life, are they going to, you know, we're not talking about like symptom alleviation because that can just be another conversation. We're talking about returning someone to the ranges of motion that would indicate for this variability that we're talking about, right? Or this adaptability.
It's restoring the movement options that we would prefer to have available. Yeah.
Sure. So it's like someone that is in a very focal pain or has an issue that is recurrent they do not have these options available to them anymore. That's what you're talking about earlier with poking the same spot over and over again.
Yeah.
They have created limited options for movement based on how far forward and turned that they are within this, you know, normal compensatory sequence that we would see given their archetype, of course. So you need to get help to figure out where your starting point is.
Yes.
Intervene in ways that can help walk you back towards that more options area or state.
Right. So the reverse engine. So if we can understand the structural elements and we understand how they influence behavior, we can actually follow somebody through space and time as to how they got to where they are, and then that allows us to apply new strategies. So this is for those of the physics folks, It's like, this is like entropy. It's like, how do I offset? Like, I'm always going to move towards disorder. Everybody's going to move towards disorder unless you input energy into the system. And so that's what we're talking about when we're talking about reverse engineering. So what we're going to do is we're going to identify what behavior is currently present, how they got there, and then we're going to reverse engineer this process. And so if someone has exhausted their base of support and they are strategizing to try to hold themselves in space, it's like, we can identify that. And then we can reestablish a new base of support. We can reestablish a new behavior through input. Those would be our activities and exercises and manual techniques and mechanical influences and such. And we reverse engineer it. So we literally take them from where they are. We move them back through space and time, if you will, even though it's actually forward, don't tell anybody, right? We're actually moving them into a new space where they can actually control their behavior, control their center of gravity, and help them maintain the movement options that were lost as they were moving through space initially.
Yeah. And it all, we have not developed a way to, or do I ever believe we will develop a way to go back in time. So there is no backwards.
Yes.
You can only go forwards. And it makes a lot of sense. I think that's a really good point to repeat, is that when we're reverse engineering a sequence of compensation, mm-hmm. you're not returning them anywhere. We're not sending them back anywhere. We are bringing them forwards to where they currently have fallen, where yes. they currently are falling. So yes. If I've fallen forward and outside of my base of support with my structural, strategy or my, mm-hmm. my movement strategy, instead of trying to bring that step back to my base of support, I'm going to go meet that step. I'm going to move forward to yes. adjust my base yes. of support, yes. which is, I think, a different way to think about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's still from a process standpoint, it is still, you're still reverse engineering it, right? We're just doing it in a new space.
Right,
which allows us to make the change because you've exhausted it. Yeah. that's a really tough thing for people to grasp, is that you've actually exhausted the space that you have available. So we need to go establish a brand new one versus right. like. And again, it's like so you think about the forward head thingy, right? It's like head is forward, pull it back. That would be a backwards strategy. What you actually want to do is identify what direction they're actually going, move them farther into that direction, reestablish the basis for it, slow them down so that the head no longer has to move in that direction.
Right.
And that's exactly how it works.
Understanding too, I think we didn't really mention this early on. What holds us up is air, basically. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's
Compressed fluid and air. Yeah, sure.
Right. So in the forward head position, anyone that's experiencing a lot of compression above and up top, mm-hmm. the air and stuff is being pushed down.
Oh, yeah.
So I have to figure out a strategy in a way as I'm reverse engineering to get the air to go from the bottom up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That will get someone more erect mm-hmm. or actually fix posture. But what we're talking about is airflow.
Yes.
Well, we're not talking about squeezing weak muscles or stretching tight muscles, which right. we talked about in a previous episode.
Yes.
Bill also mentioned motor control in the brain. That was another previous episode. So uh-huh. watch those if you haven't yeah. yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah. we talked about identifying where you are within the base of support or outside the base of support. What that is going to look like is finding someone who understands how to take table measures or how to mm-hmm. interpret dynamic movements and assess them in a way that allows them to figure out what we just talked about, where you are at within your strategy and compensation, and yes. what to not only that, but what to check along the way as they intervene yes. to try to know if they're making a difference. Because a lot of right. times people, I believe, just use table measures as they're looking for these normative things. They do a mm-hmm. bunch of stuff that typically works. They check their measures again. They get better or they get worse. And that's it. Right. There's no other complex thinking there. There's no other like right. coherent thinking there, really. It's just yes. a matter of like, have I improved this one measure, but I don't really know why this is important to begin with.
Right. It's the interpretation. It's the interpretation of strategy. It's not chasing a number. Everybody in the whole wide world has idiosyncratic movement. Like right. they have their own, right? They have their own average. We're using numbers that are actually made up. By the way, yeah. there is zero frame of reference.
And they weren't even agreed upon until very recently, right?
There are occasional studies that will show up, but the variance, like they'll say, well, here's the average, right? And the variance is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So they're trying, but they're not. And it's not that the research is bad. It's like, it's just not a very good frame of reference to say, oh, you need to have this much motion. What they need is enough to do whatever it is that they want to do in the way that they want to do it.
Right.
Right.
And yeah, by you using the fancy word idiosyncratic, all you mean is that every individual is going to have their own normative, I'm making air quotes, yes, values for what their ER should be. Hip ER should yes. be or hip IR yes. should be. It's, you know, yes. mine might be more normal on higher levels of external rotation just because of my sure. structure
absolutely.
And how I'm built. And yeah. it's not like chasing a certain number because it's in a textbook. And as like assuming that all of us are trying to approximate this average yes. representation, there is
the average measures are not goals.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
That's not what you're trying to achieve. You're trying to establish behaviors
right.
that are effective and solve a problem more effectively, provide options and
they're repeatable. Know, they allow yes. you for some consistency. Yes. They yes. give you a management.
They allow
strategy.
You to change.
Yeah.
They allow you to change. Like the biggest, you know, you talk about pain or diagnoses or whatever. It's like those are just representations of the inability to change. And,
right.
and a lot of what we're trying to do is promote that. It's not chasing 60 degrees of hip ER. We have a number that we can use and go, okay, is it higher or lower than that? It's like, okay, so what? The reality is like, what can they do? Right.
Yeah.
Well,
all right. I mean, have we
exhausted the posture?
I don't know. I don't know if we've answered if in a definitive, I guess in definitive.
We've given people information to reconsider.
Right? Yeah. I mean, that's the goal, right?
It's like, you know, it's like there's no ideal. You're looking at a dynamic strategy. You need to understand.
Yeah.
You need to understand what that strategy means. And then you have to resolve what your intention is in that circumstance.
Right. And it's context dependent. It's dependent on what you said. It's dependent on the intention.
Context.
And it's very much dependent on the
Absolutely.
Person, the person in front
Absolutely.
Of you.
And yeah, and just eliminate the fact that there's an ideal. Understand that you're trying to get people to when you're trying to make a change, it is a change in the options available.
Yeah.
Right. A static representation, a slouchy kid sitting there playing video games has nothing to do. With his ability to move in a different context, right? So you have to consider that. And it's like, I know mommy and daddy, they don't like to see a slouchy kid because of the perception of, you know, like you can extrapolate many things associated with you know, someone's physical appearance, right? And so people want to look a certain way, and that's where the mom thing comes from. It's like mom wants you to look pretty, and then they associated pretty with walking around with a book on your head, you know? And the reality is like it would be great if it was that simple, because like I said, if it was that simple, we'd have solved back pain, you know, decades ago.
Yeah, just but you we know, did. They were chasing something that doesn't exist. Hopefully,
well, that's why it's a failure. It's like well, we are chasing something. If that is your perspective, that like posture is something right other than right. what it is. It's like that's why you're not effective. Right.
Yeah.
Things have been misnamed, mislabeled, and misrepresented since the beginning of time. And then tradition has locked them into some sort of belief system and has established ineffective strategies to resolve them. It's like we have to look at things, we have to look at all of these things differently and understand them better.
Right. And we have to help people solve these movement problems with better yes. strategies that
yes.
help give them the options so that they can manage their center of gravity within their own base of support.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, just because we've talked about it a bunch, what are some things that you were told growing up that were just terrible advice?
Like, what are the you mean like that, if you keep making that face, it'll stay that way?
No, not even the superstitious stuff, but like what people thought was actually real. And we have since found out through advancements in science and technology is a terrible thing to tell someone to do.
My grandma told me the moon was made of cheese.
Okay, well, that's not what I'm talking about. So, for instance, okay, I know people that or I trained some people that were a little older, and they have their parents were obviously much older and are no longer alive, but they would, you know, back in the day, if you had some type of gastrointestinal issue or acid reflux, they would just tell you should drink heavy cream.
Oh,
all
nice.
The time. And they were just, you know, causing these nutritional issues. Or, you know, people growing up in a family where you're told you always have to finish the food on your plate because there are starving children in other places in the world. That is terrible advice. And it creates this culture and this personality trait of overeating just because you have to finish your plate. I feel like that was bad advice that I got growing up. And it actually led to me being kind of an overweight child, I think. But what I'm trying to think of, and I'm sure other people in the comments will have examples of things that they were
if
told.
They survived this long.
You know, sit up straight. Obviously, you have to sit up straight. Gosh.
Yeah. I still hear that one.
Right, yeah. That one hasn't gone away.
No, it's going to be a tough one. It's going to be a tough one.
Yeah,
you and I and the six people that listen to this will make progress.
Well, I'm trying to think about now the things that we do now that people are just going to look back and be like, well, even, you know, they used to put asbestos in everything because it was a great insulator, and then realizing like that was killing everybody. And that's just terrible advice now. I think we'll figure out, not that we haven't figured out it now, but in the future, I think people will be questioning why we ever had so many plastic things.
Well, that's just going to take an alternative, right?
Yeah.
The problem is that it's so prolific that there is no alternative.
Yeah, there isn't. It's too embedded in society.
It's everywhere.
Yeah. As I'm looking around, literally everything in front of me that I can see has plastic in it. Every single thing.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, as I drink my plastic water bottle, listen to music and watch
plastic in my ears.
My plastic phone, yeah. All right. See you later, everybody. Bye.